wisdom, and then also given the fact that we have been persuading each other for some time, the meeting is not going to be long meeting. I think it's going to be a very short meeting. And then we'll be able then to identify many issues. We are going to request the Secretary to the National Assembly again to take us through on the draft, draft 25, because after that meeting we agreed that you would go back, look at it, and then put everything that was spoken about, and then capture issues. It may not capture each and every way, though, but the essence of what we're discussing, I think, is captured. And then if there are issues that you want to add, the members will be allowed to add them, have a discussion. The Rules Committee, I'm told, is meeting on Thursday. Thursday, too, we are meeting to present this. Then it's good for us just to finalize everything. When the secretary and the team goes out, they know exactly what we agreed on, what we are proposing as options, what are the issues, generally, to be easy for them. They mustn't second guess us. It must be easy to them to say, this is what we agreed on, and then ensure that we, and then I think you have done a good job, colleagues, and you have been working on this thing for some time. And then I think we do have time now. I think we are full of energy. And then with the and then let us then allow, of course we tried to get to those to come in, but it seems that late. Let us start with our meeting. It's always good to wait for our colleagues and then to ensure that when they come, they don't just go for us and they are not there when we're discussing issues. And then I know that sometimes when they are a little bit angry, they're also a little bit harsh on our support staff, which generally under normal circumstances is not a correct way to do. It's far better for politicians to go to a chairperson rather than the staff, because the staff is here really. They are doing exactly what you yourself request them to do. If you are not happy, in the next meeting, you can raise that with the chairperson of the committee. Let us discuss it and see what we can do. I don't think it's correct to attack them. And attacking the, I think also Advocate Jenkins also was really a little bit viciously attacked, and I don't think it's the correct way of doing things. I really prefer that when we are angry as members of parliament, let us go for members of parliament, save the staff. And then going from Daran is much easier because he understood you better, then he can be able to respond, but not for the staff, because really, they can't answer you sometimes because they must also respect you. But when you attack them unnecessarily in the media and everywhere, then it becomes a little bit clumsy. And then, of course, I wanted to say this to everyone here, but we can't also wait forever. Secretary Tasso, please take your time just to take us through on some of the issues. Members will have their copy. They will really see issues that are missing there. They will identify for us and have a discussion, finalize it. And then I know that when sometimes reported outside can be a big issue and members come here a little bit angry, and then general, you don't report yourself. Those who report sometimes, they can understand one section of the issue, not the totality of what we are trying to address. And then that should be understood really. The members should understand that they wouldn't really come a little bit taking us on some of the issues that are conveyed also, that are disputed and addressed. And but we are always very happy, colleagues, that we are here. John is welcome from a very successful trip, John. Your trip was very successful. Yes. We have learned everything. Come back and assist us to manage the affairs. As the class, so can take us through.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. colleagues. At the last meeting, the committee discussed the three options that were presented. Firstly, it looked at the principles emanating from the judgment, and for reference purposes, we've made copies of those notes. And the committee looked at the three options. And the three options, if I may just recap, honourable members, was a panel of, say, judges. The other option was where you have a committee of members which has the discretion to consult a panel. And the third option was a committee compelled to work with a panel. Eventually, there was an agreement that we would have two options. The one is a hybrid, where you have this committee that must work with a panel of judges. That was the dominant view at the time, panel of judges, and have a panel made up of judges. And the hybrid version was that you would have three judges and the fourth person would be an evidence leader. There was also a discussion about the composition, and our understanding of the decision, at least last week, was that you would have this committee that is not constituted or composed in terms of proportional representation, and that is what we understood to have been the conclusion at the end. Of course, I understand that some members have a different view, but we're happy to adjust that if that was not the correct version, and the panel. So these rules, draft two, is really have been put together along that framework that I've just summarized now. So we start with definitions, where you define inability, misconduct, and what serious means. And we've provided these definitions because that's what the judgment directs should be done, that there must be a predetermination of what constitutes serious misconduct or serious violation of the law or constitution, and what constitutes misconduct and inability to perform the functions of the office. We have cited the relevant paragraph in the notes. And then the next part is the initiation of the Section 89 motion. A member would initiate, and we have inserted by way of a notice of motion in terms of Rule 124.6. Rule 124.6 is the rule that deals with notices of motion. In other words, you give a member the option of either reading the motion in the House or submitting the motion in writing. So we thought there should be that flexibility. Then the motion must be limited to a clearly formulated and substantiated charge, which prima facie warrants an inquiry. The charge must relate to an action or conduct by the President in person, and it must be consistent with the Constitution. And the term charge must be understood as grounds for averring the President's inability to perform the functions of office, if the motion is in terms of Section 81(1)(c). We have also dealt with the issue, the role of the Speaker. There was a sense that perhaps Speaker should not vet the substance of the motion, but Speaker's role should be limited to process. And therefore, we've come up with this version that says once a member is given notice, the Speaker may consult the member. We want to open that possibility in the event that the motion does not comply with set criteria, and there needs to be an engagement with the Speaker. It should be possible to do that so that you don't forward a motion that does not comply with what motions are supposed to be like, just in terms of form, not necessarily in terms of substance. Then the Speaker would then refer the motion within 24 hours. Honorable Carter raised the issue of time frames, and that we thought the committee was for that, that we should stipulate time frames where applicable. Within 24 hours of submission, the motion will then be referred to either the committee or the panel established for the purpose of Section 89 motions, and that the Speaker must inform the House and the president of the referral. Now, honorable members, the court, the judgment then prescribes that there should be a preliminary stage of considering this kind of motion. This is a fact-finding exercise. So when once it is referred, it goes through that structure, and once the structure has considered the motion, it comes back to the assembly or to the speaker, stating the findings and the recommendation. The recommendation would either be that there are grounds or there are no grounds, and that it must be scheduled urgently. Now, the issue was raised, it's a bit Mr. Dr. Lozzi is not here. The reason why we kept it like that is because paragraph, I think it's paragraph 179, but it assist me in the notes, says that the National Assembly must decide whether grounds exist in order to initiate a process envisaged in the section. So it seems to us that in terms of the judgment, whereas you would have this preliminary stage, but the judgment suggests that it is the NA itself that must take the decision whether these grounds exist. Now, we also want to just highlight that when you consider the spirit of the judgment, especially at this stage, the spirit of the judgment is that there should be no possibility to block the motion. However, the text of the judgment itself, once it says take it to the House, you cannot tell the House how to vote. The House could potentially block this motion even before it gets to the impeachment stage. So I think that's a matter that one has to consider, whether which route you take, whether you adhere to the text of that paragraph, or whether, because the Assembly is a master of its own procedures and rules, whether you would want to create, to adhere to the spirit of the judgment that says there should be no possibility to block this motion before it runs the full course. So we thought we should just highlight that issue. And when I responded to Dr. Ndlozi, I made that point, because I did respond to him in the weekend. I made the point that is why we put it like that here. So if you then follow that provision that says the House must make the determination, it means the preliminary stage must report to the House, and the House must then decide what happens. So I think that's a decision that must be taken. Then, if the committee says or panel says, go ahead, you then refer it to the mechanism that would have been established, panel or committee. And at the final stage, it comes back to the House. I will now come to the mechanism that was discussed. Let's start with the committee, this hybrid version. Again, we were asked that we create a structure that would work with a panel, and that is exactly what we have done, a structure that where each party would be represented, and parties would be represented equally. We have done that. And we also discussed that perhaps what you need, because this will not be like your ordinary committee which sits every week, or even may sit once in a year, in 5 years, or once in 10 years, that you appoint the members of this committee as and when necessary. So you wouldn't have people appointed on a permanent basis on a structure that might not sit for a term of parliament. So that is what we have provided for here on 2. And then the chairperson, there will be a chairperson or a deputy chairperson. Then on the functions, of course, at the time the committee would be the one that appoints the 3 retired judges and 1 legal practitioner as evidence leader to assist it in its work, provided that there must be specific terms as agreed to by the Rules Committee. Then the committee would consider the motion and make a recommendation within 30 days. This is the preliminary stage. So within 30 days, that structure must have made a determination whether there are grounds or there are no grounds for this. Report to the House, and the House decides. And the member concerned could be afforded an opportunity to appear before the committee. And once the Assembly approves that, go ahead, there are grounds, then it's again referred to this committee, which must then get into the detail of the issue, delve into the detail of the matter. The committee must ensure that the inquiry is conducted in a reasonable and procedural fair manner, afford the president an opportunity to appear before it, to be heard in his or her own defense, be assisted by a legal practitioner, And we then said the committee must, when it reports, include in its report a report of the panel or panelists. And for the purpose of performing its functions, it has all the powers applicable to committees. And we provided for decision making. We also thought that because it's going to be a, the committee might want to have a subcommittee that will then get into the nitty-gritties of the matters and advise it as and when it needs to be advised. So we've made provision for that subcommittee. Then the next one, option two, would have been the, would be the panel, which consists of 5 retired judges proposed by the Rules Committee, if the, and there must be gender balance. If the Rules Committee cannot agree on names, then the Speaker would propose a panel to the Assembly. We've been in discussion with our colleagues at Legal Services about how would you put together this panel. They are still working on the issue, but there are various, well, there are some options. Some of the options would be that you could approach the Office of the Chief Justice, who would recommend retired judges, but it's still a matter really for discussion and how that would be realized. There isn't much in terms of what has happened elsewhere on this, because elsewhere the constitution, like in Zambia, does prescribe how you do that. We also looked at the Judicial Service Commission, how this matter is done, where you have a tribunal and a misconduct committee. The Chief Justice there plays a preeminent role in terms of appointing those structures. Then quorum, the panel may proceed with this business when 3 panelists are present. A question before the panel is decided by a number of panelists. And then we go to the functions of the panel, which are really similar to the functions of the committee. They may also appoint a person as evidence leader. Just to clarify, honorable members, option two, there is no there is no committee there involved. It's the panel of outsiders, put it that way. But members could come in to lead evidence in terms of this option if it was if it is adopted. So those are the two distinct options. Tabling of reports, when the panel is reported, the Speaker must table the report in the Assembly without delay. We inserted this. It was not in the submission by the EFF, because there needs to be an interface between some mechanism for the panel to interface with the House. The panel cannot report to the House. But how you show that is by creating the Speaker as that point of interface, where the panel would report to the Speaker, and the Speaker would be the one that takes the report to the House. This is important because even if the initial stage we were to give it to the panel, that would still be what would obtain at that level. Chairperson, that is what we have produced, and we are at your disposal. From our side, we will, whatever is agreed to today, we will be ready to deliver a product for the Rules Committee in the course of tomorrow morning if there are fundamental changes to this document. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Castle, for the presentation. I think we have captured all the issues that were discussed in the subcommittee. And of course, really, it's always assumed that members, as they come to meetings, sometimes they touch base with their leadership one way or another. And then, because they wouldn't come here without having touch base with their leadership to say how do they see this and that. I know that members are consulting on almost every day. And then sometimes we may come and think that we finalize issues. In the next meeting again, there will be other new ideas and opinions. I think that's how things should work under normal circumstances. And I think what we should do then, just to avoid, again, going for page 1 to 5 and 6, I want to be very, just a little bit procedural and also very methodical, general, part by part. Because we won't meet now until the Rules Committee. Would be a good idea just to start first with the definitions. Definition first. And then any issue there that we think is very problematic. And then because the team, John, I've noted you, because the team now, they won't have another time. We don't want them when they present it to the broader meeting, and then we start saying, no, this thing, let us just agree we are dealing with one, number one, definition. What are the issues then? John?
It's just a concern I have around the definitions, because obviously we don't want to miss stuff out, because Section 89 refers not only to a serious violation of the Constitution or misconduct, it also talks about law, violation of the law. So I just wonder if we shouldn't include unlawful under either as a separate definition or include it under the misconduct definition there. I don't know. It's just, if you look at Section 89.1A, a serious violation of the Constitution or the law. And I just think what's missing from there is that section on unlawfulness in terms of the conduct of the President.
Yes, Jefferson, I think we could include that under misconduct. So we don't need to have a specific separate definition, because if we look at this, clearly we should in the definitions understand what is meant with inability. Secondly, what constitutes serious misconduct. And then under the heading misconduct, that could all be listed. And then the serious means the extent of it. And I think if we include the unlawful under the definition for misconduct, then I think it would make sense. But Chair, my hand was also up, but you've now ruled that we work differently with this pamphlet.
When it's behind our views, sometimes it doesn't go methodically. It's very easy to control that. And then when we pass, everyone has said, to avoid again taking these and articles, otherwise it becomes very difficult. I think we've been doing that rule by rule, thought by thought, generalized to ensure that we form it now. When we present there should be really representative general of the Honorable Honorable Kulebo? We are fine. Of course, general language can be improved. Language can be improved. Lawyers are here.
Perhaps just some advice from the legal section, if we may, around negligence, willful negligence, whether that would not, is it covered under reckless, or is it a separate definition? So if you are willfully negligent, would that not constitute serious? By the trust and placed in you as the President to uphold the Constitution, to fulfill the duties, to promote national unity, etc., if you're willfully negligent of that, would that be a separate category, or would it fall under reckless?
Thank you, Chairperson. Look, we considered all of those terms in trying to come to a clear definition, and willful doesn't quite go with negligence, because negligence is by nature more case of carelessness. So what we thought was a more encapsulating phrase was good faith. So if it's other than in good faith, so that would capture where something that's willful, it could not have been in good faith. So we really agonized about that.
The other issues that we think about, please improve on that, because the reason why we want them to be there, because the court is instructing us to do, because otherwise even a preliminary stage can't even start unless we are sure what is this definition in terms of the proposal. Can we move to initiation of Section 89 procedure? 1, A, B, and C. Yes.
Chairperson, without stating it deliberately, it means it is a substantive motion, because it refers to it must be a clearly formulated and substantiated charge. So clearly we can understand that that means it is a substantive motion. I just wanted to make sure that... Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is that is what we have always argued about, bringing a motion that is sort of any member of the House, and clearly the President is always protected as a member of the House. So I just want to make sure from legal that it is not necessary to insert specific reference to substantive, and then we are covered in that section on the initiation of the process.
I think it's consistent to use just substantiated.
We are ready to move. Let us test to substitute. Any issue there that you want to worry about in terms of your language? There are a lot of words need here. I'm just very sure that you carry them in the way. And just to put it there. Of course, the weird that near can be but generally, ourselves, nothing to short of can you move then, if you all agree, to move to compliance with the sharing? One amendment. Well, is it argument that when the Australian House is in session, during the move of motion, sure, the member can stand up there and move a motion. Is that an understanding? Are we agree with that? Yeah.
My understanding, if I may just confirm that, because I don't want there to be dispute later, that this is merely to ensure that it is compliant with the rules of the National Assembly in terms of the form and mode of a motion. It's not to simply say, well, I don't like the wording that you've chosen, or it's to make sure it's a competent motion in terms of the existing rules of the National Assembly. Is that correct?
And that's how we function the situation. But again, if there is language there,
we always pray for our legal team to always assist it. And then because when this thing happens, if there are many loopholes, can cause a lot of harm to any legislature or any parliament, particularly National Assembly. Can we move then to a referral of the motion? Yes, ma'am.
To do this to Chair, I'm just thinking out aloud. I'm looking at the notion of any member. I'm looking now, they've got 400 members, and you find yourself receiving 20 separate motions. Because I think we must find a way there as well on how we deal with that, because they may all be substantive. I'm just thinking out aloud, Chair, that kind of coordination. Gucci, the seriousness of this type of motion, when all 20 members see what's wrong and they're all filing these motions. I get the notion of I raised it first and so on and so forth, but I just think it becomes a grey area in terms of how we particularly handle the traffic of these things, because I'd imagine such a motion would arise when there's actually a glaring something for everybody to see, and so there comes 20 out of the 400 members raising this. I'm just raising that in the context of the issues of compliance now and the prioritization of these.
Yeah, I think that we would follow the same train we use for probably the Monk 102, that it's the first competent motion lodged with the Speaker's office. So the Speaker will receive those motions. There will be a sequence. Not everyone can handle a motion, you know, at exactly the same time. So there will be a timing sequence. The first motion that's in is checked. If it's competent, that's the motion that goes forward. The others would fall away anyway by virtue of the rule of anticipation, because you wouldn't be able to table on the order paper a matter which is due for discussion and had been accepted. And given the strict timeframes up here, I think the rule of anticipation would absolutely apply, because, you know, within 48 hours it's got to be sent through. So there's a, you know, the possibility for it to be debated is absolute. So I think that would deal with it. But, I mean, you know, if a party submits a motion first, but it's ruled incompetent because it doesn't meet the criteria in section 89, then the next competent motion, you know, the 1220, would then be the one that would be considered. I know that some monk works in the Speaker's office, so I don't know if that would be the solution, or if there's another mechanism we need to do where there's a consensus. The other option is that there's then a consensus committee that gets together and all the 20 people get together and come up with an agreement. But I think given the political environment, it would be very difficult to do so. But I think that Honourable Schlengler makes a very good point. But I think we should be consistent in how we deal with, you know, with other constitutional motions as well.
Julie?
Chairperson, but that is just my question. If we look at 102, and we know we have had more than one motion of no confidence at the same time, so how was that handled? Is it necessary to create an additional mechanism, or is it just first in, first compliant, will proceed? Because otherwise I don't see any specific provisions on more than one motion which is introduced submitted to the Speaker's office. So the same would apply here in this case, except that there's an additional hurdle, and that is obviously, does it comply with Section 89 of the Constitution? So I don't know if there was, from a procedural point of view, if the NA table had difficulty to manage more than one motion of no confidence at the same time, would it not be the same in this case?
Is it really a problem? Because my view really that we have been dealing with motions for some time, motions of confidence, of no confidence, and then I think there's no bigger issue really on this. The motion comes, the motion qualifies, the motion approved, the motion is put forward. We wouldn't have 4 motions or 20 motions on the removal of a president. And then I think the first one that is qualifying in terms of the criteria is accepted. I think really there will be no need to take all of them again. And then, but I think the point that is raised in politics, the person then says, my motion, I think the point that you are raising. But also motion general are decided by parties, broadly speaking. I have never seen a single member of parliament just waking up in the morning and reading a motion that the party whips. They have not even agreed to it and agrees on that. It's very rare. Is alone. It does consult its party. But generally, I think, Honourable Sengwa, we may not have a bigger problem.
No, sir, it's not a problem. I get the, what am I saying? I get the technical response. It's fine, but I raise it all in the context here that within the tight time frames in which this is, first come, first serve, right? You don't comply, go and rework it. What does that do to any other potential motion that might be there? Do you first fix one? That's what I'm asking, because ordinarily here we're dealing with time frames, which, as far as I know, don't generally apply to any other motion. So, but it's not, if the response that has been given suffices, I'm pretty comfortable with it, but I was looking at the fact that they generally may be a problem, because even if, Chair, you say it's parties, the rule says a member, any member. So that was there, but I will take what has been said, but I raised it in that context.
Well, maybe there's no bigger problem. I think we must proceed. Senwa is raising an issue that we should consider on our level. And then can we move to sub 2? I take that committee or panel, we are going to come that when we decide on committees or panels. Therefore, the waiting there that is underlined simply means that when we finalize that, then it will change accordingly. Okay. Can we move to the speaker? And is there any issue there? Of course, the president, I think we are saying, must be informed. Do you want to improve that action? No? Yes.
I think the point I wanted to raise here is whether
you want to inform the president even before the motion is vetted by the structure or the panel, or you would rather inform the president at the point that the panel says or committee says this motion meets the grounds in Section 89 and therefore Parliament must proceed with it. So I think you may want to just consider at what point do you inform the president, because it could very well be that the committee says no, there is no basis here for this motion and therefore you should not consider it.
Chair, I think we must also remember that in our preliminary discussions the other day, we also spoke about setting a timeline. Because what I see here, we've put urgency, let me just find the word, due urgency given the program of the Assembly. I mean, if you had a speaker who was not really in favor of the motion coming before the House, you could say that legislation was coming before the House that was far more important, and you could have this put off indefinitely. And that's why I specifically mentioned the fact that I thought we should have some kind of timeline. And we even spoke about the fact that, you know, what if it comes over December and how we deal with it if it's in a recess period. And then it would be the first sitting of, you know, the first normal sitting once the House resumes. But I don't think we can keep it at just the due urgency given the program of the Assembly, because, I mean, that gives the Speaker far too much discretion. It's unfair as to the discretion.
I hear what Natasha is saying, but I also want to refer to Rule 129, because we had the same issue when it was in relation to Section 102 of the Constitution. And here it is said, the Speaker must accord such a motion of no confidence due priority, and before scheduling it, must consult the Leader of Government Business and the Chief Whip. So perhaps if they would feel more comfortable, we could have a similar wording here, so that it is not, you know, because at that stage, that was the court finding that it must receive due priority. So it would probably be the same of, you know, when we have a motion of this nature. So I think we could probably borrow from the wording of our Rule 129.
Thanks, Chair, but I think to answer the question that has been raised is that maybe it would help to inform the President once there is a firm House decision, because to inform the President of hearsay and rumors and something that's been processed, then I think we must inform the President on the resolution, which, right, we have, the decision now has been taken and impeachment proceedings will be moved against you, because... Yeah, so I was just trying to respond to that. So it actually finds its space, proper space. Or they are informing him that there's this, we are now going to process it, and then we'll come back to you. I'm not sure, it sounds a bit clumsy. I don't know. Yeah, but actually, I'm not saying I don't know. I'm proposing that we, at that point when the House has decided to do it right, or when the motion has been determined to be compliant and has basis, and that the processes in Parliament will now move, and then we start.
Okay. Consider, of course, that President and the Deputy President, they do have parliamentary councillors. And then generally, they inform them daily. But I think we are talking about the formal one by the Speaker. And then, Honourable John.
Having been involved in some procedural litigation around these types of matters recently, I think we should rather err on the side of caution, because what you don't want to do is to give a president the opportunity to say, well, you know, I was only told at the last minute. So let's rather be upfront. You know, what you can refer to him in the second stage is the instrument that once it's a declared motion. But I think that we don't want to open Parliament up to a stage of, well, you know, he can approach a court and say, well, they were discussing me without informing me. And there was a process started, and I only came in, you know, a quarter of the way through. So I think it will lock it down if he's informed at every step of the way about what is happening, so he can't argue prejudice at a later stage.
Yes, Chair.
Chairperson, I was actually making that exact note, and that is my feeling as well, but I think over and above that, the committee may want to consider giving him an opportunity to respond in writing to that. I don't know if that is opening another can of worms, but it is a decision ultimately that's going to be taken, that's going to have further consequences.
Chairperson, I would like to suggest that I agree with Honourable John that we should actually perhaps include that in the initiation of this 89 procedure, either there as a third paragraph or under referral of the motion. Once it complies and the member is informed, the president should also be informed. The reason being that is sort of advance notice so that there could be no prejudice, and that because if the House decides, remember the House will decide after the committee / panel reports back to the House to proceed with impeachment. That's too late. I mean, it will be all over the media, whatever. So it will be necessary right at the outset to actually have a specific provision that upon receipt of a, you know, upon submission, and that is why I would suggest that we include that under initiation.
Part 2 of referral of a motion doesn't serve the purpose, because I do think that it serves the purpose. Once a motion is there, of course the leader must be informed, and but we can improve on it. It's just to ensure that it's much clearer. I think John is right. That would be unfair really to wait until preliminary stage. You start discussing about me, but I don't even know what is it all about. I think the procedure and processes and fairness is very important. Okay. Can we move to consideration of the preliminary stage or report? And again, committee panel, we are just putting both of them for the purposes of you. If you do agree, we are able to say exactly what you prefer. We know that in our last meeting there was a lot of issues that were discussed around it. And can we have a view on this? Julie.
Chairperson, here I find under consideration of preliminary report, I find there is a step missing. And that is just because, remember, the next heading is consideration of the final report. Now, the final proceedings and the formal impeachment process will be kicked off with the resolution of the NA, that we will proceed with a formal inquiry. That is my understanding of paragraph 179. For the impeachment process to commence, the Assembly must have determined that one of the listed grounds exist. And I think that is just where we must build in. The President must be informed of scheduling of any decision on the report, etc., and then the Assembly must decide to proceed with impeachment. If grounds exist, the Assembly must decide. If grounds don't exist, clearly this doesn't go any further, because then it's a frivolous motion. So I think it's just there that I would like to suggest that we introduce an additional specific reference to the NA that should decide on the impeachment process to commence.
What is station number one now? What do you define it?
I think Mr. Castle knows.
You want to respond?
The report panel must contain findings and recommendations, including the reasons for such. 3, the report must be scheduled for consideration by the Assembly with due urgency given the program of the Assembly. And obviously the President must be informed of the scheduling and any decision. Now, that is just where we must remember that the report must serve before the National Assembly. Am I wrong as far as... The preliminary report as well.
Okay.
Sure, no. We have covered some of that under the functions of the committee, but we will we'll consider it and see how best we can include it between preliminary report and consideration of final report. In any event, consideration of final report will come after the mechanism. So when you do the final draft, we'll rearrange some of the sections. But we get the point.
Just a technical thing, again, you know, seeking assistance from the legal advisors here. It says it must contain findings and recommendations, including the reasons for such. Should we not have it there, including any written representations by the president? Because what you'd want to give the assembly in that preliminary report is give the president Audi Ultram and you know, before the assembly on that preliminary report. So if he's made a written representation to that committee, then I think it would be included, because the National Assembly, in taking it to the next step, would have to have all the facts before it. And I worry that if we exclude any written representations made by the president from that report, it could be a one-sided report. And then we could, you know, be held up for procedural unfairness or irregularity in terms of the process. So it might just be something we consider including at that stage.
Of a scheduling and any decision on a report. Who decide? And on this issue, I thought that was preliminary. We're talking about whatever committee of members or a panel of competent judges or a combination of some at a time when there was a discussion on this matter. And then they work on this matter. And then they come to a determination that now, given the information available before them, with reason and with reasons and other objectivity, there is no case to answer. Then the matter falls out. We don't continue because already there's no issue there. And when there's an issue, then the consideration, of course, the next one would be the inquiry processes. That is the second stage, if it qualifies, because there's a prima facie evidence that there's something wrong that has happened on that. Surely. Just, I want us to be a little bit clearer, because we shouldn't go to the rules and confuse them. Clear about the procedure and processes.
Okay.
Every wording that we put there should be clear in our mind why we're putting it there. Yes, Julie.
Chairperson, I just want to refer to page 80 of the judgment, and it's specifically page 80, the paragraphs 179, 180, and 181. It says specifically, for the impeachment process to commence, the Assembly must have determined that one of the listed grounds exists. This is so because those grounds constitute conditions for the president's removal. A removal of the president when none of those grounds is established would not be a removal contemplated in section 89(1). So my argument is you cannot have a panel or a committee because they cannot have final decision making. Only the NA can have that. Then it says, equally, a process for a removal of the president where none of those grounds exist would amount to a process not authorized by the section. And then 180, Chairperson, says, therefore, any process for removing the president from office must be preceded by a preliminary inquiry during which the Assembly determines that a listed ground exists, and it proceeds.
So my argument is just, we cannot skip this very important decision of the Assembly in the process. Otherwise, we have not allowed the Assembly to determine that. And then thereafter, the impeachment process proceeds. You know, the whatever is whoever participates in it in that committee, and then the final report is presented, and that report is voted on with a two-third majority to remove the president. So I just wanted to make sure that we are complying to these specific paragraphs. 181 says, since the power to remove is institutional, the Assembly must decide and facilitate the initiation of the preliminary stage. And that is just my contention, that there must be an additional step.
But also, just to, there should be some comfortability. Because if you read the judgment on other parts, it says we must not develop mechanism block the process, you see. And to achieve two-thirds just by mere report, you see, it will create a problem, you see. I'm just saying that it's a very difficult step, you see, because it doesn't then talk to the judgment on how you make sure that the process doesn't get impeded. You see. Read the judgment from all sides of it, and see how you handle the process like that.
Maybe also one just understand to follow. And that we just to follow it, because you don't have another subcommittee meeting unless the rules committee decide to take
yes.
it back. Which anyway, I don't think would be very helpful.
But that's why I was...
Then the motion is presented, is read in the chamber, or is presented in writing to the speaker. The speaker referred the motion to some team. We'll call them whatever you call them, but there's a team there. This team look at the motion. Looking at the motion, of course, they must take all what we have written in the definitions, the violations, the seriousness, all that. If they come to a determination that there's a case, surely they have to report back to the speaker. And then to say, speaker, we've looked at this matter, we think there's a case here. And the speaker take it to the chamber. The chamber then decide, because that's the point that I want us to be clear. If Julie, the point that you are raising, I think you are saying that it is the chamber or the National Assembly that will take a decision whether we continue or we don't continue. Because the chamber must decide if they accept the report or not accept the report. And then, because we must be clear about this one, because it's a much difficult one. And then just to be clear that all of us, we know that all the thing will be done. Like all committees of parliament, they don't take decision on behalf of the chamber, outside the chamber. The chamber will take a final decision. Lawyers are here also will assist. John?
You see, reading the spirit of the judgment, I think what the judges were leaning towards is trying to prevent a tyranny of the majority, to prevent, you know, where a party uses its majority to block a constitutionally mandated process. And so I think that's why, I think it's at 171, they talk about a predetermined set of criteria, and I'll go back to the point I made at the last meeting I was at, two meetings ago, about why it's important to have these predetermined criteria. Because if one of those predetermined criteria are met, surely the National Assembly would not have to then vote on, you know, on that. It, you know, if the committee decides that the predetermined criteria is met, then it should automatically proceed to stage two. If the NA is obliged to apply its mind to whether the criteria is met in the report, the subcommittee is correct or incorrect, then, I mean, would you need another two-thirds threshold? Or would it be a simple majority then that's... Okay, but you still then, I don't think you're avoiding the tyranny of the majority to block and, you know, block the, you know, the passage of the, you know, to the next stage, which I just think we need to grapple with as well, because I think it may be a problem going forward.
No, that's
That's an issue, really, that you must be clear in your mind. Because surely members of the Rules Committee may raise it. And then those who are drafting it, they can say, we never look at this one. We must say we have applied our mind, and we are making this proposal, bearing this and that and that and that judgment and other issues there. Just we are clear that we don't go there. Because if a decision had to be taken by a National Assembly, there is no other structure that assumes responsibility of a National Assembly except the National Assembly. No committee of parliament can take decision on behalf of the National Assembly. Therefore, we must be sure that I think the legal team will also assist us. And then because if the preliminary report is presented in the National Assembly, then the speaker will call for a decision. Then a decision then is 50 plus 1. Then those who are in majority can still defeat it there with preliminary report. Then we can continue with another stage. If the National Assembly says no, there's no ground here, even if the team that you set up, whatever you call them, they say no, there's a prima facie evidence here. National Assembly can take its own decision. And therefore, that's an issue that ourselves here must apply our mind to show that we don't go to the rules and the general, not applying our mind. The legal team is here to assist us. Let me check Shengwa and I'll come back to you.
Chair, I think this is precisely the area of the court's concern, because then you might as well not even have a process of impeachment, because in essence what we are saying is that the chamber must have two or three bites of the cherry on one process. I would imagine that when ad hoc committees, in as much as I loathe them, are appointed, they're not reporting on every stage of their work. They are appointed and then we'll come back at the end of a process to come and report, which, right, we have worked. And I think if they are competent enough, which we imagine to be, then they must run the process to its logical conclusion. Because ultimately, whether it's a panel or it's a committee, what is going to happen is that at that preliminary stage, the work will not continue. So I'm trying to juxtapose this now against the modalities of an ad hoc committee to give the committee or a panel the powers at appointment, then run the process through, and then come back at the end. I'm really not sure how this helps the process when you must subject, because I mean I would imagine that when you've submitted a motion to the speaker and it's been approved, it's passed the test, which something is fundamentally wrong. Now, to then bring it back, because what I'm trying to say actually further than that is that this is a different process to the norm. So the towing and froing may lend us in a difficulty. I think we need to strengthen the capacity of what the committee or the panel to make these determinations. And then if at the final stage, the House feels good, no, whether your process was flawed, it will make a determination then, which yay or nay by two-thirds or not. But we're going to subject this to be derailed by INEC. The majority will derail us, Chair.
What is the fear of majority? When in fact you are in parliament here because of majority. Many of us, we are ruling local government everywhere because of our majorities there. I don't think at the principal level you can take a view that says majoritarianism is a problem. And then otherwise there will be no democracy anyway, truly speaking. Democracy, by and large, is based on consensus, you can agree, but at the end, majority rules. And then it's very important for us not to articulate it as if majoritarianism is a crime. when in fact everything that we do when we are running municipality, wherever we are, we take decision on majorities. But I think on this process is to find a way of dealing with it in a manner that I think Hlengwe you are raising, that it should be a double approach. The speaker receive it, take it to the team look at it, it may come to a conclusion that there's no issue here, then that motion is gone. If they come to a determination that there's an issue here, there's a prima facie evidence, then the next step then kick in. But then who take a decision to do so? It seems we are taking a view that the team that works there, once they make a proposal, come to the speaker, and then someone will take a decision to take it to the next stage. And then should be a speaker. Of course, generally the speaker will receive a report, apply her mind or his mind, and then take it to the next stage, because I think the panel, if we agree that the panel will be Hlengwe and Killian, that panel will never work anyway. And same when Killian and Yami, I think the panel will not work. And because I think they would think about many other issues. And that's why sometimes you need the panel that will do it in the manner that should maybe would be persuaded. But I think that is understand that the preliminary report is given to the speaker by whoever the team that we are going to call. And then the speaker look at it, there's evidence, there's everything. And then the speaker kick in the next stage of the inquiries. And then that next stage take issues and then calls people, whatever they want to do. And then at the end of the day, they take it to the House. Then the National Assembly then take a decision by voting. There may be consensus anyway sometimes, but by voting. And then because you need two-third majority to take or to remove a sitting president. And is that the understanding, lawyers?
No, thank you, Chair. My observation is that this is one of the difficult areas with the judgment itself, because there's a contradictory issue between the spirit of the judgment and the letter of the judgment. Now, if you were to follow the letter of that paragraph, it's really not no different from what we've had all the time, because what you had previously, a motion submits, a member submits a motion, it goes to the speaker, speaker assesses the motion, prima facie evidence, and then the motion goes to the House, and then the House can either say yes or the House say no, says no. So it would not be different. But it seems, as I said initially, that the spirit certainly is that you should try to avoid that. And as I said earlier on, that the House is the master of its own processes and procedures. And maybe my colleague could advise on the binding nature of that paragraph in the judgment itself. Now, let's say that you don't go to the House. What you could do, the structure reports to the speaker. The report would still be published for information. So it would still be in the records of Parliament, like in the ADC. And then speaker would then refer, would then take the process to the next stage. Even that next stage would be published so that the rest of the membership of the NA, they know what is happening and what with the motion. So I thought I should just raise that point.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree with your summary. And in fact, as Mrs. Killian has read out 179 and 180, paragraphs 179 and 180 of the judgment, are quite clear, and if read with 193, which is the paragraph I think that Mr. Boyer referred to, the three paragraphs actually support that spirit. It's a trend throughout. But 193 goes further, and 193 talks about the problem of the majority blocking it from getting to the Assembly to make a decision. So it actually reinforces the way you summed it up, that decision must be taken in the Assembly. And as to the binding or otherwise effect of the obiters that flow throughout this is the Constitutional Court, and these are such strongly worded obiters that should there be any challenge, this same court is not going to go against what it articulated so expressly in its judgment. So I think we must take notice of it.
Yeah, you see, this is what I flagged at that meeting was going to be the dilemma, because it talks about a predetermination of what a serious violation is. So what the problem that you could have then is that the committee finds that there's that the motion meets the predetermined criteria, and you could have the National Assembly then voting against that, the proceeding of it. That, I think, is the dilemma, because then, you know, the motion satisfies the predetermined criteria decided by the Assembly, but it then votes to not proceed. And I don't think that, I think what the judges were specifically trying to prevent, not the fact that, that we have majorities, was that there would be an arbitrary, rejection of it, which is why they spoke about predetermined criteria. But I think that Judy's right about the Assembly, and if one looks at the judgment, it uses Assembly in the capital, and our own rules in the definition means the National Assembly. So I think that the advocate is right in terms of that, but I think we're going to, the very first hurdle, the first time this is tested, is going to be at that stage, because if the Concord or a court of law finds the President to have seriously violated the Constitution, and that initial committee votes by majority not to proceed, we're back where we started again, prior to the judgment. And I think that was always going to be the dilemma with, because you can't really have an exhaustive list of, if the President, commits rape, or the President commits, shoplifts, or the President, fails to promote nation building. You can't have an exhaustive predetermined list. But, so I think that was always going to be the dilemma. Because, as I said at the time, your version of what is a serious violation of the Constitution or a willful behavior of the President or reckless behavior of the President may not be my interpretation of what's reckless or willful or, or the like. So, we can't make rules for every eventuality, and I think that's the dilemma that we sit with.
Chamber must then decide with a simple majority, because it's a report. For simple majority, they're not reporting to remove the President about the removal of the, they're reporting about whether they are convinced that there's a prima facie evidence to continue to stage two. And then the Assembly sit down, says, okay, fine, Julie, you have done well, but we don't agree with you. Because you can't tell the Assembly how to vote. You can't force them how to vote. They will vote accordingly. And is it not that it is the reason why all parties must continuously win hearts and minds of the people? Because if there's a convincing evidence, it would be very strange for any party to risk its societal anger, to vote against something that everyone says beyond doubt that, hey, there's a problem here. Because that is what happens. Otherwise, if you do that, you pay your price in terms of the society, the community, the electorate. They will decide what to do. That's a problem that we are trying to follow the letter and the spirit of the judgment. But doing that also, we may also trip ourselves. It's far better, again, John, to take the point that you are raising. We must err, but a little bit on the good side of the law. Advocate?
Yeah. Thank you very much. I hear the concern, and it is a real concern, and that is the problem with the judgment. But this is actually where the minority judgment actually is a little bit helpful. And because Mogoeng alludes to the fact that such a process is very difficult for an institution like ours, because there must be a really good reason for the Assembly not to go along with those objective findings. So therefore, the majority judgment stresses that these criteria must be spelled out so clearly that it can be objectively ascertainable.
Chairperson, I certainly didn't want to introduce a hurdle. What I wanted to just say is
are we not going to have a problem as far as the process is concerned if we don't heed these paragraphs? Second thing is, I hear what the chairperson is saying, and I absolutely concur with him. By this time, this will be so open and transparent, and you know that the findings would be so concrete that it would be virtually impossible. I'm saying, for the assembly not to take note of it, especially if we know that the panel that will be doing the objective assessment of that is one that is trustworthy. And I think that is where we should come in. Thank you, Chair.
But John, come on this one, because I thought that was the main nuance point, that you can't put members of parliament in that preliminary stage where they decide whether there's prima facie, whatever you call them. But you can't put them, because anyway, they would have two stages of voting. They'll vote first to give right for it to go to the next stage, but also they'll vote at the end to decide whether they remove or not remove. Then I thought that's what we are nuancing, in fact, that this one should be objective people who got no interest here, who are not members of parties, and then allow them then to decide. Once they've decided, they'll be objective, and then they'll come to you and say, this is what we found, then please consider it. And then because National Assembly can't outsource its responsibility to anyone except to itself, then that's a dilemma. I think we should work out on that. John?
Yeah, I think we're going to get to the bit later on to the role of retired judges, and then, because I think there's it's not as clear cut as I think we all think it is. I have a big problem with the National Assembly outsourcing its roles and responsibilities. But we'll get to that a little bit later. But I suppose I think the point I wanted to make is that the avenue is always open. Then should Parliament, by majority vote to not to proceed, even though the grounds are met, that decision would be reviewable in terms of rationality and reasonableness. That in terms of its own rules, it's not a rational or reasonable decision to be made, and any member of the Assembly then is able to review that decision. And I suppose that would be the additional safeguard. I don't think it's a perfect safeguard, and I think litigation is very expensive in this country. I think that that backstop is there should Parliament act in an irrational and unreasonable manner.
We can't jump that stage where the preliminary report given to the speaker taken to the chamber, and then the National Assembly itself deciding whether they continue to stage one or stage two or stage whatever, because it's based on them. And then, of course, if the National Assembly does something bizarre, general, that can't be done by anyone under the sun, then people will take it on, head on. In fact, we have lost many cases anyway. And then I think we'll take on there, go to review, then it's a review saying that National Assembly, we have violated the Constitution anyway by the manner in which we have handled this matter. That would be fine. But that's, we can't jump issue, because if I'm a sitting, I'm a president to be removed, there's a process that we have not really applied our mind on. I can take you to court too, that the National Assembly has a right to decide here. You jump this because we're in a hurry to, in fact, we're very prejudicial. And then it's far better to follow procedure and processes correctly. And I think, John, that one can assist that. Colleagues, that's how we do it. Lawyers, you draft it accordingly. Already is there in terms of decision. Of course, it's 50 plus one, because that's a report of a committee. To continue or not to continue. Okay. Colleagues, let us work it out. Can we move to the next one? Final report. Once a final report, of course, then I think it's the easiest one, this one. John, you wanted to make a point?
The only thing that concerned me about this one was at 4, which is a question must be put to the Assembly directly for a vote. I mean, that, I presume, presupposes that there will not be a debate on the matter, which I would find extremely odd in a case like this where I think the House would want to express itself and parties would want to get themselves on the record whether they were for or against. And you'd want to convince each other why the two-thirds threshold should be breached in order to get you over that important line. And I think to rule out debate, if that's what directly means, would also run into the potential of a challenge that has the National Assembly applied its mind to the matter. If you can go back to the court and say, well, this matter was debated for an hour and 30 minutes or 2 hour debate, I think it would be hard to argue that the National Assembly has not applied its mind to the findings of the report as well as to the representations made.
Serve the purpose. Just look at sub 3, maybe can assist us.
We'll just remove directly, Chair. Yeah.
Okay. Directly should be removed. Because there will be a debate. Because you can't remove who is not going to be a president in the next 100 years, Nyami. And you can't remove Nyami without giving members of parliament time to debate, to do everything. And then we'll be fair. I think 3 covers us very well. I may be surprised anyway. And I may be surprised that I have to vote for you one day. You have to be yourself. Okay. Can we move then if we agree? Can we go to mechanisms? To inquire. Yes.
Sorry, Chair, to do this again, but I just wonder if we shouldn't be explicit about including any representations made in that final report as well by the President. Yeah. Just to ensure that there's, you know, at every stage that is representation.
The word representations made, we are very robust Parliament, which takes public participation. Now, we've got very active civil society. Where do we place the urge to want to make representations in that regard? I'm trying to zoom into that, the scope of these inputs. Because we have said parliamentary process and so on, well, majority of us, let me not use that term here, but the consensus seems to be that this is a parliamentary process, and for all intents and purposes, we must build into a parliamentary process. Now, then, I'm a public submission. I'm just trying to get a Hambagatli approach with less scope of those representations. What's it? Starting point and ending point.
Then that is only the second stage. But all committees of parliament and
subcommittees can be open for public. But in a situation like that, I would expect that people will also want to make presentations. Lawyer can advise you, but I don't think we can deny them their right to make presentations. And
the affected person. Yeah, the affected person.
This process
is open. And then I'm a member of a society, I got evidence. And then I apply that I want to make presentation and on this matter and this matter. Can that person be allowed to do so? Of course, the person who's charged will be allowed platform to defend himself or herself. And then, but if you are a member of a society, committees are open, and then you can write to the speaker, I guess, in terms of the rules, and then say, no, I want to make some presentation on this. And John?
Yeah, it's just to maybe just tidy up 3 and 4. I'm sorry to take you back, because it seems to allude to two potential outcomes. So one is that under 3, the report must be scheduled for consideration and debate. 4 deals with if the report recommends that the president be removed from office. Now, are we not removing the right that we spoke about in the preliminary report of the National Assembly to determine. So, for instance, the report itself may, you know, based on the findings, not recommend, but ultimately the decision rests with the National Assembly. Are we not vesting too much power into that committee and removing it from there? So maybe what we should do is say, the report must be scheduled for consideration debate by the National Assembly without delay, and then the question must be put to the Assembly. At the conclusion of the debate, the report must be put to the Assembly for a vote in terms of the rules of the question to remove the President is supported by at least two-thirds of the members. The President, I just think it tidies it up there, because it looks like there's... Yeah, it looks like it...
Because the National Assembly can't outsource it to another. The committee presented a report to the National Assembly. The report got debated. And then we go for voting. The voting then is by two-thirds majority. But we are voting after we have debated the report. And then the presiding officer called for a decision. And then we vote by show of hands. And then we close the matter. Julie?
Chairperson, I just wanted to reply on the role of the public. Obviously, all our rules in the Constitution makes it clear that you know, we're an open parliament with public participation, etc. It's not necessary to write anything specific in this section. In fact, this is almost a quasi-judicial process. So it would be very inappropriate. You know, public participation, they can make submissions, etc., to Parliament, but this is a very formal process, and it must be a fair process. And I think we can agree on that. Thank you, Chairperson.
And then with that in mind, the lawyers keep digesting it. Can I invite you for dinner? Take our 20 minute colleagues. Food is ready. And then take it. And then we can also be a working meeting. We'll go, we take something to eat, we sit down, we continue with our meeting. I think I prefer that one. Because you are not wearing suits today. Yeah? We prefer? To have dinner? But I think she will understand. That in fact, we don't want a fruitless expenditure. And I want you are the one that's going to be debating and saying, then you must eat. Let us, can we break just to take it and come back and eat and we work? Okay. Also to allow body break anyway.